We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, it's Pod Maverick After Dark. We are on different sides of your screen. If you're watching on YouTube, we are changing things up. We're throwing you a curveball. Mavericks beat the Spurs, 113-107. It's Pod Maverick. It's Josh Bowe, joined by always Kirk Henderson. And I am doing the hosting. I am starting us off because I barely watched this game, so I need Kirk to carry the load. It was my daughter's third birthday tonight, so prioritize that. She is currently terrorizing my wife, her mother, with a Mario Kart Rainbow Road set that makes sounds in the living room as we speak. So we are talking Mavs basketball. The Mavericks win again. They beat the Spurs 4-0 against the Spurs. Kirk, how are you doing?
I'm good, though. That game was unnecessary. The Spurs had really cool uniforms, is my first takeaway.
I like the court too.
It did. It looked good.
Yeah. So it looked like, because, you know, I catch bits and pieces. Like, I had it on in the background. So, like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know, they get up 8 at the end of the first quarter. And I really kind of figured that, you know, it was going to be smooth sailing from there. But the Spurs just kind of never went away. So, what happened that caused San Antonio to stay in this game longer than I think anyone reasonably expected them?
Well, a big portion of what happened tonight centers around the fact that Luka Doncic shot a truly magical 6 of 27 from
Lord, I'm just now looking at that.
I mean, wow. It was like somebody had turned his shooting slider on NBA 2K all the way down. And there was nothing he could do about it. In the first quarter, he was doing the veer hunting where he was very clearly looking for fouls with the guy on his back hip. The NBA is not calling that anymore. They're just not calling fouls where a defender cannot defend a player and he has no chance. Like, that's just a point of emphasis now. So he was missing a lot of bunnies. And this is, he started out 2-2. So he essentially went, if you back out those first two, he went 4 of 25. I mean, that's incredible stuff. So that was really what got things going. He missed 10 straight shots in the first quarter. It was something else.
Wow. When's the last time? Has he ever missed? So he went 6 of 27. So he missed, what is that, 21 shots?
Mm-hmm.
When has he missed 21 shots in a game before? I mean, he certainly hasn't this season.
I went to StatMuse and I said, tell me Luka Doncic's worst shooting game, and it won't give me an answer. like giving me like season long things. You know, he
even the computer doesn't. Yeah, the computer's like doesn't work. It starts frying because it's.
Yeah, if I had ChatGPT, I suppose we could do it right now on my phone, but I don't have it installed on this phone. And I don't feel like going through game logs. He's had some bad games, but I really do think that. Jonathan plays says in the chat that this is his career high in misses, and absolutely. But then the rest of his stat line, I mean, this is a box score for the ages. It makes no sense. No sense. Because it's like Luka ends plus five despite missing a ton of shots.
16 assists, triple double.
Kyrie Irving is somehow a baffling negative 10, despite really quite clearly being the only reason that they pulled through this game in the end. Like, he was quite good. I don't even know where to start with this one.
Why don't we start toward the fourth quarter, I guess, because that's where, you know, I had the game on in the background. I could hear Mark Folwell and Derek Harper while I'm trying to put together a plastic Hot Wheels track.
It was the Hot Wheels one. Okay, I know which one you're talking about
now. Yeah, the Hot Wheels Mario Kart Rainbow Road. It's very nice. She likes it a lot. I'm very impressed. Kudos to Hot Wheels, quality product. But it looked like the Spurs had the lead in the fourth quarter, if I don't mistake, a few times. Like, was this just, you know, the Mavericks were 10 of 29 from three. Obviously, Luka shot terribly. And Kyrie missed all five of his threes. Like, did the three-point shooting just kind of let the Spurs linger around?
This was a through the rabbit hole game in terms of the three-point shooting, where Luka missed nine, Kyrie misses five, so that's 14 misses. The Mavericks only had 19 misses from three. All right, they went 10 of 20. So I know you weren't here the other day for the incredible Denver game, but I know you watched it. Go through the lineup. You look, Dante Exum was an incredible 4-4. Him and Kyrie were basically the reason that the Mavericks won. Tim Hardaway, 1 of 2. Maxi Kleba hit a shot. And I made a joke where I said he hit a shot for the first time since the Lincoln assassination. I mean, we're approaching 170 straight played minutes without any Kyrie baskets. And then, you know, PJ Washington finished 2 of 5, but I'm pretty sure he hit his first two. And you know, that it was very much a through the looking glass game compared to the Nuggets game.
That's hilarious about the misses from Luka and Kyrie. So Luka and Kyrie missed 14 of the 19 missed three-pointers. The Denver game, they were the only ones that made threes. Everyone non-Luka, non-Kyrie missed a three-pointer against Denver. So it's almost like they just role reversaled. Mm-hmm. Was it Kyrie? I heard Kyrie's name a lot. How did they get, you know, they're down in the fourth quarter. And, like, let's be real, they haven't been in a situation where they're playing a bad team and trailing in the fourth quarter in a long time. They've mostly taken care of business. So what changed when they went down in the fourth quarter?
Candidly, they just got lucky. I mean, you look at the rest of Luka's stat line. He was on the floor. He had 16 assists in the game. He had 11 in the first half. And then he had 5 in the second half. I'm pretty sure that's correct, at least along with 10.
Yeah, he had 11 in the first half. I remember hearing that that's a lot of assists in one half.
But I would credit the scoring with Kyrie and then with Dante Exum. There were a couple of plays down the stretch where Luka, and this just they need to like run this shit back on film to Luka on repeat. Luka cut through the lane three different times during, I want to say, two back-to-back possessions on crunch time. Mm-hmm. And you could tell the Spurs freaked the fuck out. Like, it was like, oh no, what is this? Luka's moving. Holy shit. And one of them was like a clear out. It wasn't even a cut. It was like Luka moving through the lane to give Kyrie space to work on the right wing. And Kyrie, I don't even know who was guarding him. It might have been that Barlow guy. Uses his jab step and gets to about a 12 footer where I really honestly thought he could have all the way gotten to the rim and hits kind of a just a short fadeaway. That was a key shot. And then there was another one that involved Dante Exum to where I might have been making a drink because I was a little stressed out. And Exum hit his fourth straight three. Like, Exum was I shared my Jack Donaghy clip from the pilot of 30 Rock. Like, Exum was very much the third heat in this game. He was just different enough as a ball handler to help the Mavericks in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, 4 of 4 from three. I mean, he's still shooting. Like, he's made almost half of his three-pointers this year, which is pretty outrageous. He didn't score very well. This was his best scoring game since he's come back from that long injury. His ability to spot up and knock down shots has been, like, huge. He didn't have a lot of assists, which he normally does in some of these games coming off the bench. But, yeah, it looks like Wimby had another bad game against the Mavericks. We want to pivot to maybe what worked defensively. Like, does PJ Washington just have his number or what? Like,
well, I mean, the real key thing, and this is very important, Wimby is wildly fucking overrated on offense. And I lose my mind when people yeah. talk. Like, he's going to be an incredible basketball player. He is an incredible basketball player. Like, there's just no other way around it. But he tries to do stuff right now, whereas, like, I was listening to was it Harp? Like, Harp talked about how the thing that will separate Wemby is his ball handling skills. Like, shut the fuck up. He's 7'5". What will separate Wemby is the fact that he's 7'5". What are we doing here? And he really wants to play as a power forward. He really does. Yeah, he does. Like, a power forward to a small forward. And the Mavericks take advantage of that by bodying the shit out of him with big guys who can move, where somebody was kind of constantly in his undercarriage, for lack of a better term, which is kind of everyone when you're 7'5". But it was really odd. Like, he makes these really beautiful moves to the basket, meaning Wembanyama, and he didn't finish some of them tonight. I mean, he finished, what was his shooting line?
3-13.
At one point, he was 1 of 6, and it was like, ugh. It was very, you know, that ridiculous meme on the internet.
Yeah, it feels like you said, like he doesn't feel comfortable back to the basket yet. It doesn't seem like he has that game yet. Even though he's got a great touch around the rim,
I think it's the broken mentality of current basketball where it's like, what if, and like, he doesn't necessarily need to post, because I think the balance element of posting up is a little harder than we like to talk about, but they've got to get him the ball in the middle of the key without him having to get there himself, if that makes sense. Because when he turns and shoots basic 12 footers, he's really quite amazing. He's so skilled. He's got soft touch, but a lot of the difficulty of his shots is really there. Is what I thought. I'm all wildly impressed with him in multiple like circumstances. Like, he blocked a PJ corner three where PJ clearly was like, oh no, how did this happen?
He does that a lot. 6 blocks. He's a monster on that.
Yeah, well, and not block. Like, I love it when Falwell like blocks, like calls a Daniel Gafford block and is like, you know, sending it to Garland. Like, I love that. But Wemby does a lot of blocks where he keeps the ball in play, which is just, I don't know. Wemby's going to be a problem.
He kind of is a problem. Already.
Yeah, I mean, there's
not tonight, obviously, but, you know.
Well, there's all this weird stuff about him being defensive player of the year, and it's like, you simply cannot give a guy that's on a 15-win team defensive player of the year. Like, I don't care about his plus-minus numbers. But he was really shockingly good. The chat, I noticed this in the chat. The chat is very sort of frustrating that the Mavericks went to small ball 5 to close it out. For the first time in several weeks, I didn't hate it, because you're trying to draw the big man away from the basket. So I don't know. And my, who is this? My Way in the chat says, I'm surprised they put PJ on Wemby. That's the second straight game where they used Wemby, despite Daniel Gafford actually being pretty good when he's in his body. I like the opportunity, because
Go ahead. I was going to say, I mean, this is the second straight game they put PJ Wemby, and the second straight game Wemby's been bad against the Mavericks for the most part.
Yes. So. Yeah, and I think that matters. And, like, there's a lot of fan frustration with PJ Washington right now, mainly because his offense sucks. And I get it. You're not incorrect. But the defense is pretty good. Defense is pretty, pretty good. And if you don't think the defense is good, I will go watch it again, is what I'll say. I don't want to tell you don't know what you're watching, because that's not fair. Because I'm like, fuck, I'm not going to sit here and act like I watched, like, all the off-ball possessions. I'm not a liar. But it is difficult to see defense sometimes in a team format. where like what the Mavericks do defensively sometimes from a team scheme perspective drives me crazy. There's elements of what PJ tries to do and has done with the Mavericks that they needed before they got PJ.
Yeah, and I think the big thing with him when he first got here, and of course he's trying to learn new scheme, you know, I mean, they didn't play any defense in Charlotte. I know their coach, Steve Clifford, is a defensive guy, but they were not playing defense over there. And you could tell, like, the overhelping when they lost 5 out of 6. Like, he just kept overhelping the strong side corner. And I don't necessarily think that was, like, him freelancing. That felt like a you're being told to do this when this happens. And I feel like since that losing stretch, they've mostly cleaned that up. I mean, they're still giving up corner threes that they probably shouldn't. How many did the Spurs shoot tonight?
A lot. they shot like Jeremy they Sohan.
Shot 17 corner threes.
Sohan was 3 of 9, and he hit a couple of early ones, and it felt like, oh no, it's going to be one of those games because he finished with 13, 10, and 6. And Sohan is just one of those guys who I caused like a Spurs Twitter kerfuffle when I just basically said that Jeremy Sohan sucks. And like he might not suck, but like shooting is such an overweighted skill for how the game is played these days to where I really don't think he sucks, but it's just, if you're going to go 4 from 15, you're hurting your team.
Yeah. You got to basically be like, even if you're like prime Tony Allen on the other side of the ball, like that's still in today's game. Like it's just really hard. It's really hard to be effective, but yeah. So they give up a lot of corner threes, but I think PJ, like I saw some tweets going around from, you know, like the stat muse accounts of the world that was like comparing what PJ and Grant Williams have done since the trade deadline. And like, yeah, PJ's offense has been pretty bad, but the defense is a night and day difference compared to Grant Williams. You know, Grant was meant to be a defensive leader. Like they brought him in to help change that side of the floor. And outside of some pretty good post defense, it was not there. And I think you see the versatility with PJ where he's bodying up Wembanyama and forcing some misses. And he's also able to switch and move his feet. And I feel like there's a little bit less blow-bys when he's on the floor compared to when Grant was on the floor. So I appreciate his defensive versatility, and I think it's showing on the tape, even if the numbers, you know, even if the plus minus doesn't look good. Obviously, he has to be able to shoot. Like, it's, you know, you could get away with beating the Spurs, you know, doing what he did tonight on the offensive end of the floor. If you want to try to beat a good team in a 7-game series, 4 out of 7, you know, you got to win 4 out of 7 games. Like, he's going to have some good offensive nights. But defensively, like, I've been pretty impressed because I was the part of the floor I was most worried about when he got traded here, because he was really aloof in Charlotte. And sometimes, like, we like to say, much like with the offensive side, like, oh, guy's going to play with Luka, like, he's going to play better, he's going to shoot better, all that stuff. And we've seen how sometimes that just doesn't happen. Grant Williams, Josh Richardson, now PJ, necessarily, he's not shooting any better than he was when he was in Charlotte. In fact, I think he's shooting a little worse. On the same token, it's defensive side, because you just, you know, a lot of people just assume you're going from bad situation to good situation. You'll probably pick up your effort level on the defensive side of the ball. Sometimes it's hard to break bad habits. Like, he's been in Charlotte for, what, 4 or 5 years? Like, he learned a lot of bad habits playing on a bad team that had nothing to play for. I think it's, you know, he's been a little unsung on the defensive end, because that's hard to change mid-season, no training camp. Like, the fact that he's buying in and giving a level of effort that he wasn't in Charlotte, I think is important, and it's going to help him.
Well, there's also the simple fact, and like, this is just one man's opinion, I could be wrong. The Dallas Mavericks defensive scheme seems to be from a time machine. Like, if there's like, granted, I'm happy the Mavericks are winning right now, but there's going to come a time that we're going to lose our minds. The Mavericks defensive scheme gives up a lot of corner threes. A lot.
They gave up 17. That's a lot in one game.
You cannot do that. I'm sorry, you can't. And they give them up willingly. And sometimes it's to bad shooters, but that's bad shooters relative to an NBA set, like NBA shooting.
Right.
An open guy is going to hit them enough. They just are.
The way they're countering that, though, is they're dominating the rim defensively. Like,
weird.
I know. They basically flip-flopped at the trade deadline in terms of strengths and weaknesses. It's really bizarre. Why were they
so bad for like the first games, six or seven games out of the break? Like, what was going on there versus now?
Whew. I would have to. I mean, what was going on in the?
They were 30th in the league defensively.
They were. I think Luka and Kyrie's level has gotten up a little bit better. I mean, they were really bad during that losing streak. I think the overhelping has stopped a little bit. Obviously, tonight they gave up 17 corners.
Guess who's not involved in that?
Who?
I mean, who's not involved in the overhelping because he can't play right now?
Oh, Josh Green.
Yeah. Josh Green and Tim Hardaway, I think, are two of the most like flagrant over or like they're out of like Green overhelps, like, and Hardaway has no idea what to do.
Yeah. He makes the and they're playing less. One's not playing at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, Lively and Gafford have been pretty good at the rim. I mean, Gafford, I was a little worried about his defense coming out of the trade deadline, not because he was doing anything he wasn't doing in Washington, but because he does struggle a little bit in space and with drop. And sometimes, you know, he will block a shot when he gets there, but it's about like, can you be there consistently, which he hadn't really shown his whole career. But him and Lively, I mean, that is almost 48 minutes a night of them locking down the rim. The Spurs shot 15 to 27 in the restricted area, 55%. That's way less than the league average of 66. Like, it's been that way for a while. I mean, how many games in a row the Mavericks have outscored their opponent in the paint, which never happened before the trade deadline? They outscored the Spurs 52-42 in the paint. Like, those guys, you know, for all the corner threes and maybe some miscues on off-ball rotations, they're cleaning up a lot of mistakes at the rim right now. Like, their length and their activity near the basket is changing things. Like, it's keeping them in these games, I think, despite some maybe lapses elsewhere on the floor.
I just contextually, who are these Mavericks? It's the whole point. So I shouldn't be making fun. I mean, look, this is just, you know, there's a lot of like potential overreaction to this game because you're like looking at Luka being like just so bizarrely broken. But the big picture thing that I take away from this game, and you know, we can kind of continue to talk around it, is number one, the Mavericks did not have a true emotional letdown after the biggest game of the season against the Nuggets. This was a trap game. Did they nearly fall into the trap? Yes, they did. Did they escape the trap? Yes, they did. And there's a lot to be said there because there's just like pivot points at this juncture. Shout out Harp of the season, to where you can look back and say, what are the Mavericks doing different? But like, they're 11 games over 500 right now. I don't think, I'm just kind of going to go through and take a quick glance at things. 11 games over 500 is the most they've been over 500. Like, they are playing the effective basketball at the right time. And we have been very critical of Jason Kidd. Our criticisms have been accurate, quite candidly. But the Mavericks have cleaned their shit up. And so I'm pretty pleased about that.
Yeah, they improved to 21-5 against teams below 500.
That is wild. They were so bad in like the, what was it? It was the
last season.
Okay. I was thinking maybe the KP limping season where they made it to the Western Conference Finals. I thought they were pretty bad.
They were 15-16 against teams below 500 last season. They're 21-5 now. And they've got a lot more. They've got like six, seven more games against losing teams. So they have proven, they've given them, like, we can give them the benefit of the doubt. They are going to handle their business for the most part against bad teams. Even if it wasn't pretty tonight, I think they've earned the credit that they're going to figure it out by the end of the game. Okay, we've been talking for 23 minutes. I got to do the Kirk thing. I got to plug, plug the stream, YouTube. If you're watching live on our video stream, please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That helps us out tremendously. If you are listening to this audio feed after the fact, leave a review, subscribe to us in your favorite podcast app if that's not where you're listening to us right now. For those of you watching on the live stream, we're going to take a quick pause so that we can insert an ad for our partners. So those of you on the audio only feed, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. We appreciate all the love and support. We appreciate you guys joining us kind of on a late night after a weird game. So we really do appreciate everyone that's in here participating in the chat, watching live, or listening after the fact. If you listen in the morning on your way to work or or whatever you got to do. We always appreciate it. So we'll be take a quick break. We'll be right back and we'll close out this game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. Where do you want to go next? What have we not touched on that you think we need to touch on? Because like I said, you probably have consumed more of this game than I did, unfortunately for me, with real life getting in the way. I don't know what I want to talk to you about.
I think we can be done with this game. What the hell did you think of the absolute, Matthew did a fantastic job filling in. He always does.
He does a great job.
He did a great job. And so, but I think we still need to know, what did you think of that craziness?
Oh, the Denver game?
Yeah.
First thought is it weird that as soon as the ball left Kyrie's hands on the game winner, my brain went, oh, that's in. Like, as wild as that shot is, I feel like what's almost just as crazy is that wasn't a shooter's touch. It didn't bounce around the rim. He didn't hit it off the back. He drained that shot.
Misspoke.
It was in practice. It was crazy.
I misspoke on the initial podcast where I said he switched to his left hand. He did not.
No.
He had that damn thing in his left hand from when he came out of the corner to where he curled around. And oh my God, it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't talk to a lot of people in real life about the Mavericks. Yesterday at my son's baseball practice, I asked one of the dads, did you happen to watch this game? And he's like, oh my God, it was crazy. I talked to another dad tonight at my son's flag football practice. I was like, were you and your son watching the game? Because I know he's a big basketball guy. And he was like, yes, it was insane. I said, I hope you explain to him that you're never going to see another game-winning shot like that in your life. Now, us Mavericks fans have been privy to we've been on the shit end of a shot like that, where it was Max Strus hitting a bajillion footer as time expired against the Mavericks 3 weeks ago. But being on this side of it, particularly on a nationally televised game where the Mavericks have embarrassed themselves, it was euphoric. I was just in shock. It's great.
Yeah. And personally, I feel like Denver's going to repeat. I think they're the best team really in the league, now. even with what Boston's doing. That Denver five, the Murray, Caldwell Pope, Gordon, Jokic, their starters, Porter, that's the best five-man group in basketball. Mm-hmm. I know what Boston's doing. I understand they're very good, but that fivesome is just, it's outrageous. It's so good. It's so good. So, and the crazy thing is that's a game the Nuggets almost always win in terms of they don't blow. I was listening, your friend Adam, who runs the DNVR.
Yeah, All Cities Network. Yeah.
Yeah, All Cities Network. He made a great, I was listening to one of his podcasts. I think he was on the Low Post recently. He talked about how Denver doesn't blow out a lot of teams. They don't get these outrageous 35, 40 point wins because they don't actually shoot enough threes to steamroll a team, because they don't really shoot that many threes for how good their offense is. Uh-huh. So what he says is usually games go they kind of keep it close, and then in the fourth quarter they just hammer you. They just absolutely take away your will to live. They frustrate you in a way that they just kind of slowly creep and pull away, and all of a sudden there's there's a minute left and you're down 14 and the game's over.
Well, like, so I want to talk about that because I got into a little bit of a text debate with Adam on this where he's like, that's just what the Nuggets do. They suffocate teams.
Yeah.
And again, I love that Kyrie hit the shot. I love that Luka hit the three. But the Mavericks played like shit from 6:50 in the fourth until Luka hit the three. They played awful. And I have not been able to be online too much, thank God, because I just would have argued with people. But like, I understand why Maxi Kleber plays, okay? You don't need to explain it to me. But Maxi Kleber was fried fucking chicken during that run. He was actually better in the game. Like, he was better earlier in the game. I mean, he was solid tonight. He broke his scoring stretch. But they, like Jamal Murray sought out sought out Maxi Kleber on switches. Go watch the possessions. Murray destroyed him. There was simply not a good, like, I get the attempt. I get the reasoning. But you cannot go 6 minutes and 25 seconds with 4 points, one of those being a Derek Lively fast break dunk, the other two being Luka free throws while he missed all of his other fucking shots. That was so painful.
Yeah, I think what's crazy is because what, he was on the floor the final 6 minutes, I think. Was he on the floor that entire stretch where they only
really scored? Think he was, because he made the pass in. He was the one who inbounded into Luka where he had two options. Kid made a point of saying this where I'm like, I'm not trying to say Maxi should never play again, which is a position I may have taken in previous podcasts. No. I just don't understand why we're giving like that much free reign to a guy who can miss the far side of the rim. Like, he shot an open three during that stretch that could have killed a cameraman.
I know. I think I think we said this because this happened in the OKC game where he put Maxi back in when the Mavericks were trying to make one more run and then they lost the game. And because the Thunder took out Josh Giddey, who is normally like they were putting Maxi on Giddey and having Maxi ignore Giddey, or they were putting their center either Gafford or Lively. So they felt like, oh crap, like we don't have anywhere to put Gafford or Lively because they're going five out. Put Maxi back in. The coaching staff with Maxi, it's very reactive and not proactive, if that makes sense. Like,
sure,
they see the situation and they just kind of slot him in like a Lego piece without contextualizing the game that's in front of them. If that makes sense. So
can,
it's like,
can I issue a take here?
Sure, go ahead.
They need to treat Maxi like the defensive version of Davis Bertans. You can tell pretty fucking quickly if he has it. Because he's effective when he's good. When he's not good, it's harmful. I mean, his plus minuses are so funny. Single game plus minus is ultimately meaningless. But like tonight, he was a plus 27 in a game. The Mavericks like won by barely. Okay. And the other night, I want to say he was a negative 8 in a game. The Mavericks won barely. So it's not always fair to him. I mean, that fourth quarter stretch saw Luka and Kyrie, I want to hold them higher accountable than I will Jason Kidd, but they went to 3 yards in a cloud of dust basketball where they were just trying to take the air out of the ball.
And especially escape. With how they got that lead in the first place was they were running a lot. Mm-hmm.
They were
the Nuggets the Nuggets don't like to run. So the Maxi thing's tough. And you know what else is tough is I know the data. You know, the coaches are looking at the lineup data. And unfortunately, Maxi and I don't know if you want to say unfortunately, but Maxi and PJ, I got cleaning the glass up right now. Maxi and PJ on the floor this season, 260 possessions. The Mavericks are plus 15.5 points per 100 possessions in those in that time. 118.5 offense per 100 possessions. Defense, 103. They're killing teams for the most part with Maxi and PJ as the front court in the small ball lineups. So like you said, I think there's clearly a reason for them to do it and they have gotten some good results out of it. I just think they don't know. They don't take the initiative to realize, oh, it's not like you said, when it's not working, let's switch. Like, I don't like Maxi being in the middle of the fourth quarter made sense because of how he was playing the rest of the game. Sure. But when he misses that 1-3 where I think he shot it over the other side of the rim from the top of the key, that's when you're like, okay, let's get some, let's change it. So I think they see the numbers and they just write it out, if I'm going to assume from the coaching staff.
Yeah.
And they've got the data to prove it. Like, I'm sure if someone asks kid in post game, like, hey, why are you doing this? And he's like, well, we're winning the minutes with Maxie and PJ on the floor by a lot. And it's like, well, there's more nuance to it. It's like, well, in certain situations, it's not working. So I know someone said, can't believe that cleaning the glass stat. I know. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, again, there are scenarios where they need to pull the plug a little bit faster. Like they're just not doing that. Hasn't cost them too much yet because they've won, what, 6 out of their last 7?
No, you got to try this stuff. That's the other thing. I'm very like overreactionary in a game-to-game situation, but you have to try this stuff.
Yeah, so. Because they basically rebuilt their team at the trade deadline. They added 2 starters because Gafford's starting now, Washington's starting now. So you don't have a lot of practice time. You don't have a training camp. Like, they got to get as much time on the floor with all these combinations as much as possible. So then you hope in the playoffs they have a better plan of attack of how they want to use these guys.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of all I sort of had on it. I don't really, you know, tonight's game was just a survive and advance kind of game. And, you know, with March Madness being around the corner, it makes sense. And, you know, we're really like, we're staring at a schedule, just like a schedule that works to anybody that wants to watch something other than Mavericks basketball. We have this. we have a game on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. against the Jazz, and a game on Sunday at 8 p.m. also against the Jazz.
So Mavs fans, if you want to watch the NCAA tournament this weekend, you'll probably be okay.
Huh? If you want to watch the NCAA tournament, if you want to get caught up on Shogun, if you want to watch the – and I just – it's going to be either so good or so fucking bad. I cannot wait for it. There's a Netflix series coming out Thursday called The Three Body Problem, based off this Chinese science fiction series that is one of the most unique pieces of literature I've ever read. It's up there. It might be worse than Dune in terms of I cannot believe somebody is making this TV show. It's so insane. I couldn't properly contextualize it other than to say that a 3-book series takes place over 17 trillion years. So that's what you can do with your time, guys.
I got some good news for you.
Ooh.
On the TV front. When we are moving in April.
You told me.
Yeah. Oh, did I tell you what
we're going to watch? You're going to watch Andor.
I'm going to watch Andor and Shogun. We've locked it in.
Shogun's an easier sell for me.
Yes.
Andor, because it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And really, really cool. There was also, I don't know if you saw this today, and nobody cares what we're talking about this, but I don't care. It's our show. The Star Wars had a like a 90-second trailer for a show they're running called Acolyte.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
I was like, yeah, inject that into my nerd veins.
Because I like Star Wars a lot, and I'm actually that trailer actually got me interested. If nothing else, is I feel like it's the first TV show besides Andor where I don't have to know the cartoons that came out
in the mid-2000s. It's Star Wars property that doesn't involve Skywalkers or doesn't need anything.
Yeah, like I can watch it without needing to brush up on my history or anything like that. So I'm looking forward to that. Because I know those animated shows are well regarded, but I'm not watching.
I've been saving them for my kid because I'm gonna watch them with my kid. And that's what I'll do. But we'll see. Well, that's been enough Mavs and Star Wars talk. What do you think, buddy? Anything else for us?
I'm just glad they won. I checked the timeline, and I think people were getting a little antsy in that fourth quarter for sure. So they got to win.
Their schedule's so good. Strong punchers. Let's put it this way. They control their own destiny about avoiding the play-in, is what I'll say.
Yep. It's going to come down to those 2 Sacramento games pretty much. So,
hate that because Sacramento cooks us with fish grease, man.
They haven't played. I'm curious because they haven't played Sacramento since the trade.
Oh, that's a good take.
So I want to see what Gafford, Lively, Washington, what that trio does. I know Lively played against them earlier in the year, and Sabonis kind of roughed him up a little bit. But with Gafford and PJ, I'm very curious to see how they match up now post trade deadline.
Good take. That's a good take, man.
Well, let's get out of here then. Woo! We got recap on the site. Stats are going to go up soon on MazMoneyBall.com. I'm going to have a feature on Luka and Kyrie published tomorrow morning that I hope you guys will check out. Presumably, myself and Kirk will be back after the Utah game on Thursday. So this is Pod Maverick After Dark for Josh Bove, Kirk Henderson. We will talk to you guys later. Be good.